He is Robin Leach. He is Jada Markin.
This is Car Keys.
Good morning to our listeners for this week's show on Car Keys with Jada Markin and Robin Leach. My topic to start out the show this week is what's happening in the pickup truck business with the forthcoming, I guess it's 2025, Ram pickup lineup, which is going upscale to, I don't know whether it's such appropriate term for a pickup as a ludicrous level of luxury as opposed to an appropriate level of utility, instead of the luxury emphasis, which is going to be coming out in the Ram 1500 series shortly to a dealer near you. And that's going to start in the $80,000 price range for a very luxuriously outfitted pickup truck with all sorts of new technology and, according to Motor Trend magazine, the world's best sound system. Why the world's best sound system in Motor Trend's eyes is now going to be showing up in a pickup truck as opposed to, let's say, a luxury sedan vehicle line from somebody other than Dodge, I don't know. But it's got something like over 1,000 watts of output. It's got I don't know how many speakers, and they say you can turn it up to full level, ear-blasting level, and nothing vibrates out of sync with the way it's supposed to operate. Plus the cushioned seats and all sorts of other screened up technology upgrades is going to make this pickup truck, as are all luxury level pickup trucks, Ford and Chevrolet and the like, all up in the high five-figure series and close, probably can get to the six-figure pickup truck purchase pricing levels if you go all out with some of the options that may or may not already be in something like this Dodge Ram that's coming out. Jay, what do you think about pickup trucks being luxurious versus utilitarian?
I don't have much to say about it, only because I don't drive a pickup truck.
Really. Me either.
Never have, personally. I see them as being a utility vehicle. But then again, I get it. If you're going to spend, you know, most of your days and this is your primary vehicle, why should you be deprived of all the amenities that other people have in their cars or SUVs? So, you know, we can go both ways on this. As long as there are pickup trucks that are pretty much bare bones available to people who want them, just bare bones,
right?
That's fine. I think that, you know, it's getting a little crazy, $100,000 pickup trucks. But then again, why not?
Well,
I mean, if it is your work vehicle, hey, and you have to live in it or spend a chunk of your day in it, that's fine. They just don't do much for me. You know, a few years ago, I had to buy a vehicle to tow the big, heavy trailer that I have, and I decided, you know, or I was pretty much told, you will not drive a pickup truck. And so I drive an SUV that's capable of towing 6,000 pounds instead.
Right.
But, you know, to each their own. And I think we can leave it at that.
Okay. I will jump in and just say the other big change in the Ram line pickup trucks is the ending of the vanishing of the Hemi V8 engine option in favor of two straight sixes, straight versus V6s. This is coming back, too, in some vehicles, a straight inline six.
Quite a few vehicles, actually.
But the Dodge pickups are going to have only supercharged or turbocharged, I guess, inline sixes available for their engines, and they will put out the upgraded one or the higher output one will be in excess of 500 horsepower, which should be enough for any major towing stuff. And I believe the lower level one is in the between 300 and 400 horsepower output.
So
V8s are disappearing.
It's interesting you bring up the inline six versus V6 architecture, engine architecture, and I'm sure a lot of people would not necessarily know the difference nor care. But as you pretty much remember, and certainly we both know that back in the day, quote unquote, you know, when you had here in our domestic vehicles, you had, you know, base models were oftentimes, and in cars and trucks, were inline sixes, and the optional engines were, V8s. And so some car companies made inline six engines for a very long time, Mercedes and BMW in Europe. Here, more recently, you have the what was, I think, an excellent engine, the inline six that was in Jeep Cherokee, for instance, the real Jeep
right.
Cherokees, not the ones, you know, from recent years. And then inline six engines disappeared, and the world went to V6s, and very smooth V6s. And for some reason now we're seeing inline sixes reappear. BMW never went into a V6, but Mercedes is back to producing inline six engines. And quite honestly, I don't really know why, but that seems to be a trend.
I think there's some technological possible advantage now with the development of inline sixes to whatever they can, however they can upgrade them. But I think you're right about that. Anyways, the engines will be powerful enough for any logical use of pickup trucks, along with providing great performance virtues as well for those people who like to pretend that they want to go from 0 to 60 in a pickup truck under 5 seconds. And I don't know what the actual acceleration capability is, but that's probably around about the right level to discuss it. And that's the end of the discussion. I want to go to a safety situation. I've heard now on the news recently a couple of horrible accidents. They've all seemed to be, well, the ones I've heard about seem to be operating somewhere between midnight and early morning hours. And on interstate types of travel, where you're seeing people going down the wrong way on these interstates at those hours. One without headlights on that I know of personally, and the other just a pickup truck that managed to hit two cars before it crashed completely. And this was on the nightly news, I believe, in the last week or so of when this show is produced. The horrible idea of seeing somebody come at you at any time of day on the wrong way on an interstate is bad enough to try to comprehend. But the confusion that can be had with headlights coming on at you with a vehicle coming, as if you're going in the southbound and somebody is going north in the southbound, can be, I don't know how one analyzes it and figures out where they can avoid the possibly inevitable head-on collision type of situation which goes on. I didn't know, but heard that they're now trying to put devices on in-ramps onto these highways that will send off some signal if somebody goes in onto the wrong travel lane, going on an exit ramp. And
so
I don't know what that's going to do technologically. But, Jay, do you know anything about it?
Well, no, I don't know anything about that technology particularly, but I have an opinion. I mean, I think these situations are maybe fairly easy to explain. First of all, in the middle of the night, usually people who are mildly or very much impaired, this is usually the time of day or night that you find them on the roads, unfortunately. But I think also you have... and I have a personal experience. I, as a lot of people around here know, you know, when you go down into the city and you take that 684 South and you get on the Hutch, on the Hutchinson Parkway, it's a divided highway, as we all know, and there is that first gas station that is being renovated right now. And I was driving down there one morning around 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning, and sure enough, a car was coming up the wrong way, up towards me, and the person had a great reflex and realized that they were going in the wrong direction and just, you know, dove to the side of the road. And, you know, and I thought, you know, what was this guy thinking? And after that, I did go and stop in that rest area, and I could understand it's fairly easy to get confused and get going in the wrong direction. In some of those rest areas that are in the center of the highway.
And didn't
and
have a divider between...
In the middle
between...
of the night, when you don't have a lot of traffic, and there was no traffic on the Hutch at that time very, very early morning. I think it's easy to get confused and find yourself going the wrong way. So I think better signage, I don't know that you need electronic devices to, you know, beep in your vehicle, but, you know, very strong signage is definitely something that we could use in some places.
Okay.
And to that effect, I mean, the whole hutch is a problem. How many times have we not seen semi-trucks get on the hutch and go wedge themselves under a bridge? And again, it's sometimes it's very easy to just get on an on-ramp without noticing that you shouldn't be there. So, bottom line, keep your eyes peeled.
That is absolutely correct. True driver focusing is needed, a needed advantage on, when you're on these roads where this kind of thing can happen. You really cannot have your eyes off distracted from the traffic and making sure that traffic is going the right way, in the right direction, all the time, 100%. The other thing that's been bothering me, and I've said this on a few shows before this one, but I'll say it again, is people who are going the same way as you are, but at dusk or darker, have yet to have their headlights on. Or DRLs, are because they think the DRLs are giving them enough light, but some of the older cars, when they don't have the headlights on, don't even have parking lights on, but the parking lights are hard enough to see even if they were on. But there's nothing worse than going down a multi-lane direction, one-direction roadway, and being in the travel lane, supposedly being the right lane, and wanting to pass a line of cars that may be going slower in that lane, and pulling out and finding out that you just about got hit by a car traveling very quickly in a passing lane without headlights on. You couldn't see it because of the blinding headlights of the other cars at the same time. And I've seen cars in these multi-lanes in the opposite lane coming at you, but not in your lane, in your travel lane, with headlights out. And I just don't know how people can be so naive, if not dumb, to realize that they don't have headlights on at times, at sometimes. And there's an increasing number of cars that I have seen on these roads in the darkness, as darkness has been approaching. And I think it's a very dangerous situation. There's no way to control it or to enforce having your headlights on, because there's no enforcement on these roads in enough numbers for anybody to see this happening.
And I've said this a bunch of times off the air, and oftentimes in certain states around here, the enforcers are the very first people not to have their headlights on or no.
You're absolutely correct. I do not know why they don't have their lights on along with the rest of us. Many cars have mandatory daytime running lights on, but the police cars, the enforcement cars, are totally blacked out. Driving. And I don't know why they don't want to have their headlights on either. It's certainly a safety issue that should be enforced.
It is confusing. I mean, I drive a lot of different cars, and sure enough, when I get in certain cars, I sometimes step out of the car to see if, A, it has daytime running lights, and two, what the settings are. When you're on, you know, modern, recent cars have the setting of auto lights or lights on or off, and if they're off, are the daytime running lights on? If you put them on the auto, are they? Does it make a difference? Are they on? Do you still have DRL or not? And it varies from car to car. And I think, I mean, I've gone over this. I think the culprits are, and I'll name them: Toyota and Ford, notably, in recent years have had, you know, confusing settings with their headlights. I think
with
it
a complete
has
off, with the offsetting
Ford
being
has
completely
come around
off
to daytime running lights, but
right.
Just only very recently. But anyway, so what else do you have, Robin?
Well,
I have a few things.
There's a lot of confusion now about where EV sales are going, and I'll just reiterate it. It's not, listeners probably don't care, but a lot of people that I've been talking to recently have discovered that EVs that are range limited are becoming an inconvenience to them. And we know that if you're just driving around a local area, on a daily basis in which you do not travel more than, let's say, 100 miles a day, you don't really have to worry about whether or not you've got your battery fully charged or whether you have to worry about range. But the news has been showing up in different areas of people realizing that, cold weather considerably reduces battery output in the cold weather states, and I'll use Minnesota as a as an example, not to mention Canada to the north, but as being having a meaningful range degradation in the wintertime, especially if the cars are parked outside. Batteries need to be warmer or warmed up. And if you have it parked in a garage, and some people say you shouldn't park an electric vehicle in a garage under charge because of some of the past dangers that have been made, that have made headline news with fires and that kind of thing. I guess what the car manufacturers are now requesting a lessening of mandated year limitations for when all electric cars should be the only cars available for sale, such as California is trying to do, I think, by 2035, and other states might follow suit. So sales have tailed off a little bit, and now there are articles in about just what is the real value of an electric car purchase or a used electric car once it comes on the market. There are some good values to be had in electric cars for those who are confident of their functional use for the people's specific needs going forward. But it certainly makes it difficult trying to figure out if you've already bought an electric car. And many people had to pay over sticker for their early purchases of electric cars because there was a limitation of the numbers of cars available. The dealers were utilizing their usual power of additional dealer markup.
Let's be honest here. I think those high prices were not just with electric vehicles. I mean, through the
pandemic, you were correct. There were dealerships offering additional dealer markups for fossil fuel cars.
Yeah.
In many cases.
So I think we're just in the post pandemic era and prices coming back to normal and the market settling in.
They certainly are.
The demand for electric cars is not really tapering off. The growth is slowing. And yes, there is a push from in various countries, like you mentioned here, and but also in Europe, to push back that 2035 electric vehicles only. And you'll be happy to hear that I actually have to admit you're totally right that hybrids seem to be still the way to go, at least for some time.
No question about it. The hybrid is the way to go. So you have the backup gasoline engine. Anytime the hybrid battery packs lose their range in being able to totally power the car. And,
well, you know me. I'm still a big fan of diesel, and I know I'm the oddball.
You are.
But you still get way better fuel mileage with a diesel car than you do with a gas car. But that's a whole other conversation.
Yeah. Do you have any safety tips that should be brought up? We are almost through the winter when this show is broadcast, if you hear a rebroadcast of it, and warmer weather is coming. We talked about, as winter was developing, being sure that you had a really good set of tires on your car with as deep a tread as you could manage to have at that time of year for grip on the highways, and that you had your usual windshield washer fluid bottles full so that you could wash your windows effectively as you were following vehicles ahead of you in slushy, snowy conditions or behind trucks that were doing the same thing as throwing up a lot of slop into the air and crashing into your windshield. Warm weather leads to drier roads in general and probably less of a need, except for in rainy conditions, for the tread depth of tires to be as better than 50% of their normal remaining tread life. So anything you have to add to that?
No. We go over this on a regular basis.
Over and over, right.
Over and over, for good reason. I was reading one of the articles in one of the car magazines about, you know, what had been their preferred and less liked cars driven in the last year or so. And so I started thinking, what were the cars that I really enjoyed driving in the last year or so, and which were the ones that I thought were maybe great cars, but not so much, you know, didn't do anything for me. But was wondering, what have you driven of late that really you think is pretty cool or interesting or that you liked?
Well, that's a good question, Jay. I just got the latest issue of Car and Driver in my mailbox this morning. It's dated March, April 2024, double issue. And the headline on the front page is 15 Cars Against the Clock. Car and Driver, of course, is known for loving high-powered cars, and they seem to accentuate those lines of those levels of vehicles when they do their monthly or bi-month, whatever, periodic issues. I, for the one, cannot fathom why I'd want to buy a car simply on the basis of this sort of lightning speeds that some of these cars can do, whether it's fossil fueled or electric. First of all, it's just something that you can brag about, as opposed to whether you really want to jet away from your stop sign or every stop light every time you're allowed to be the next vehicle going through an intersection. I think it's stupid. I don't know how many sales it actually promotes, but the assortment of cars ranges from the BMWs to the Ford Mustang Dark Horse to a Nissan Mizmo, a Kia EV6, BMW X5 Competition. And, you know, it's...
So what is the car you've enjoyed driving most? I have...
You know what I've been driving, and I absolutely I find exhilarating and very effective as a vehicle, both for utility and that, are my Jeep Cherokees with the Turbo 4 engine. It's a really interesting vehicle to experience over a long period of ownership. Not only does it have very adequate performance and delightfully so in acceleration capability and passing capability, but it gets, if you're really fussy like I am about driving it, exceptional mileage for a small size SUV in terms of drive mileage capability. If you're cruise controlling at 70 or 75 miles an hour, you can actually get 30 plus miles per gallon with these vehicles at the same time, as opposed to some of these ultra high performance vehicles I was just mentioning, which you know, they go from apparently 0 to 60 in one. I'm looking at it 2 minutes and 2.58.1 seconds, and their mileage range is somewhere between 18 and 24, which is not anything to brag about in the gasoline pricing world. But I have not driven anything new, because I don't get the privilege of driving other people's cars the way you do, Jay. So you should answer your own question, and I'll let you do it right now.
One of my favorite cars in the last year was the BMW Z4. So that's BMW's little convertible, two-seater, and I did drive it on a pretty long trek, like almost 1,000 miles. And I did a combination of highway, and I did a combination of mountain roads and secondary roads, and
it was an automatic, right?
It's a 8-speed automatic. Although
yeah.
The new
for new one's coming out with a manual.
BMW is pulling a stick shift again.
With the
six-cylinder engine.
Right.
The one I drove has the 250 horsepower turbo 4. Totally adequate horsepower. Fun fast without being stupid crazy fast. Actually,
right.
Supremely comfortable, I found it to be. very quiet with the top up, and at really very more than respectable speeds, almost 40 miles to the gallon. I think I averaged 38 miles to the gallon over, you know, close to 1,000 miles.
That's excellent.
So, you know, it's a great, fun car, and I think if, you know, if we have more than one utilitarian car, you know, that's, you know, they're out there.
Well, yeah.
And another vehicle that impressed me, has nothing to do and very different, was back in Europe, I drove an electric Metris, so small van. And again, we, you know, not to restart the whole conversation about electric versus non-electric, I do think that, and they're coming here, you know, Ford and Mercedes with their vans. I think that electric vans for what they call last mile delivery makes perfect sense. And driving in the city with an electric vehicle, a van that's not very fast but perfectly adequate, was pretty interesting and quite fun, actually.
Okay, and I'll go back to my fleet. The other car that I enjoy driving a lot, and you'll find this sort of amusing, Jay, is the Hyundai Sonata Hybrid that I've had since 2013. It's amazing what performance, when the battery's got a good charge in it, which is most of the time on cruise, you get out of that when you need to pass cars on interstates.
I recall riding with you in that car the first time, and I wasn't sure that I should ever be in a car with you again because I guess you were trying to demonstrate that it was also a sports car. And it is pretty quick, I have to admit. You know.
And it gets 40-plus miles per gallon. Right now I'm on a tank that's got 300 miles on it, and the average miles per gallon for this tank is 40.6 reading as of the day of today's show. And I drove it 65 miles this morning, and it had 160 miles on it, and it went 40.2, and it still has 40.6 on it, actually. Today, and that with a 15 or 16 gallon tank gets you over 600 miles per tank full if you hold that level of my MPGs, and yet you do have the performance, as you noted, that's quite pleasant. It's just a great car to drive. It's comfortable, as you said about the Z4 BMW, in a different sense, and it's all the car we need. Without going overboard with these performance engines that
Robin,
the car magazines like
else.
To...
It's not about what we need, it's about what we want.
Right.
All right, I think we have to leave it there.
Okay, we are. Car Keys.